Well, the news is getting better for the much-besieged corncrake. The numbers of the endangered bird have increased to 223 breeding pairs this year. And it's all thanks to a new project on the West Coast called Corncrake Life, which works with farmers and landowners to provide a viable habitat for the birds. And one of the farmers taking part is Donegal man Seanie O'Bhuil.
I haven't done any fertiliser on this field now for the last 7 years, so I haven't. I've let it grow naturally itself, and I suppose it's changed, surely, you know, what's growing here. But in a sense, it's to the benefit of the corncrake, and that's, you know, why I joined the scheme, that I was going to do my bit for the corncrake when we are in this SPA area. And now it seems to be, you know, that people want to go this direction, and by going this direction, if that helps increase the corncrake numbers, sure, you know, everybody can be a winner. Well, the corncrake has been here over the last number of years, so it has. You know, we were able to come down here with the young ones, you know, and the corncrake calling in the evening. And, you know, it's likewise, I suppose, it's on the islands as well, a lot of big numbers there, you know, but it's something that draws people to the area as well, you know, so that helps in the long run too.
And that's the corncrake and Seanie O'Bhuil. Well, we can talk now to Dr. John Carey, who is manager of the Corncrake Life programme for the National Wildlife and Park Service. John, you're very welcome to the programme. You must be delighted with the increased numbers.
Yeah, it's excellent news for, like you said, a very besieged species of bird. Corncrake numbers were very low a few years back. They were almost down to 120 at one point. So to see the survey results today, the final survey results of 233, it's a remarkable recovery. But the birds still have a long way to go before they're back to the numbers that they were in the 1960s and 70s.
What's a viable habitat for the corncrake?
Corncrakes are essentially farmland birds, and they're birds that nest on the ground in grassland. So traditionally, they would have made use of hay meadows, and areas of cultivation as well. So they're very cryptic. They don't like to be seen. They're very, very secretive. But as you can hear from the sound of the male bird, he's very conspicuous by his call. So they made use of very low intensity, and for want of a better term, traditional farming practices, where hay would have been saved very late in the summer, you know, would have been cut in July or August, and very slowly, you know, hay used to be saved by cutting with a scythe and then by a horse-drawn machine and then very slow tractors. But of course, all that changed very dramatically in the 1970s and 80s as agriculture moved towards silage production. And that kind of was the beginning of the end for the corncrake. But it has survived in areas of the north and west coast where farming practices remain less intensive.
And is that part of that is delaying the harvesting and then cutting the silage from the centre of the field out?
Yeah, that's two of the three main conservation measures that the MPWS and the Corncrake Life Programme have rolled out with farmers. So you mentioned they're cutting fields from the centre out, and that can reduce the mortality of the birds by up to 60%. So just changing the pattern of mowing from cutting a field from the outside of the field into the centre, which corrals the birds into the middle of the field because they don't like to break cover, and eventually they'll get caught in the moor and killed. But by changing that pattern, the birds are kind of driven to the edge of the field, which gives them an avenue of escape. We also encourage farmers to delay their mowing as late into the summer as possible, because corncrakes are double brooded, meaning they have two nests each year, and they're very short-lived, so they need to have a lot of chicks survive in order for the population to be stable and to increase. And the other key thing we do with farmers is we encourage them to grow what we call early cover. So corncrakes like herbaceous wildflower species like nettles and common hogweed and cow parsley and things that grow quite tall early on in the year so they can hide in it. But if fields are too tidied up and, you know, kind of managed right up to the ditch, there's literally no space for them to go to hide. Plus, we've also lost a lot of our mixed farming where farmers would have crops and livestock on the same farm. And corncrakes really like those kind of habitat mosaics in our farmland systems as well.
But it is just, it's just proof again, isn't it, John, that, and we've seen this in other areas of our natural life as well, that if we change our practices, then nature can thrive.
Absolutely. Small incremental changes can be made that can have a significant effect cumulatively, like we've seen with corncrakes over 4 or 5 years. But key to it is working with our farming community to incentivize those changes and make it viable for them. And I think that's a big thing that Corncrake Life and MPWS have done, is they've sat down with farming community and met them halfway in terms of the compromise of what needs to be done, rather than just bring things from the top down and say we have to do this. We've worked kind of from the bottom up, and what we found now is a really nice balance where farmers are willing now to do this work with us, and we're seeing really excellent results from it, with a 45% increase in the number of territories detected since 2018. So it's a huge recovery. But a huge debt of gratitude also towards the farming community for working with us.
Well, it's a great result this year. 233 breeding pairs of corncrake. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. John Carey from the Corncrake Life Programme for the National Parks and Wildlife Service.